This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Dawbank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Joining us today on the Jodcast is Dr. Edward Contar from the University of Glasgow. Hello, thanks for coming to speak to us today.
Thank you for having me here.
You gave a talk about solar flares.
Yes, indeed. I spoke about the solar flare energetic particles.
Okay. So, first of all, what's a solar flare made up of?
Observationally, solar flare is a sudden release of energy in the atmosphere of the Sun, our star. And normally, these events lead to appearance of large number of energetic particles, which is the subject of my research and the subject of the talk.
How do these form initially? What creates them? What causes them to suddenly appear from the Sun?
Although we don't have a detailed understanding how the flare is happening, we believe that the bulk, the energy of the flare, is coming from the magnetic field, and the magnetic field created within our Sun. This magnetic field is through a number of processes, presumably some sort of a reconnection, turns into the energy of the energetic particles.
By reconnection, do you mean the lines of the fields are crossing?
Yes, that is a simplified view. So magnetic field lines of opposite polarity change its configuration in such a way that they take the minimum energy state and the excess energy goes to the energetic particles.
What sort of particles are you looking at specifically? Are they photons? Are they electrons?
These are mostly protons and electrons. Electrons are much more easier to observe, so it's very often that we speak about the electron. The chief reason for it is just simply electrons are much less massive, and so it's much easier to accelerate them rather than protons. And of course, we've got all sorts of other particles from different chemical elements, so highly ionized iron, oxygen, lots of helium, and so on. So pretty much typical chemical composition.
Do these particles get accelerated at the time the flare forms? Does it happen somewhere later on down the line? Is it instantaneous acceleration? Do we know that?
The answer to this question is not that easy.
Yeah.
Because we have some observational constraints, and we want to believe that what we observe is indeed corresponds to physical scales. On the basis of the observations we've got, we believe that the acceleration of these particles happens relatively fast, so probably within a fraction of a second, which is much shorter than the average duration of a flare, which is around half an hour.
Is it still disputed how these get accelerated?
There are very many models suggested in the literature, and different models have some advantages and some disadvantages. So unfortunately, we don't have a definitive answer, but at the same time, it's what makes the solar flare physics research so interesting.
Still, lots of avenues to be pursued and
exactly.
Lots of research to be done on that. How do you actually observe the flares? Do you have to use space telescope?
Nowadays, we use both ground-based and space-based telescopes. Lots of solar flare emission is in high frequencies, so the frequencies of photons above visible light. These photons are normally absorbed by our Earth atmosphere. So in order to make any ultraviolet or X-ray observations, we need to go to space. Because of that, all these observations are from satellites. On the other hand, radio observations can be still performed from the Earth surface. So combining these two, often we get the best view of solar flare phenomena.
Okay, so you use lots of different frequencies to observe.
As many as we can.
Does each type of observation have benefits? Are there preferred methods?
Each type of observations has some strengths and weaknesses. For example, radio emission in the range of frequencies above a few gigahertz, so it's like microwave and above, it's normally strongly dependent on the intensity of the magnetic field. At the same time, X-ray emissions or photons of X-ray range, they are strongly dependent on the density of the surrounding media where they are produced. So every time we use different frequencies or different energy bands, we weight our signal by some probably not very well defined value. So in case of X-rays, we will be more sensitive towards one regions of the flaring atmosphere, and in the case of radio waves, to another. And they might be not necessarily the same.
So you see different parts in different frequencies.
I have a couple of basic questions about solar flares. Do the rate of them change with the solar cycle, like sunspots, so over the 11-year cycle?
That's very true. We have flares much more often and much more powerful during the periods of solar activity. For example, we are on the rise of the solar maximum, and during the solar minimum, solar flares are normally small and infrequent.
And do the solar flares originate from the sunspots, or do they come from a different region of the sun?
Indeed, they are closely associated with the sunspot. Sunspots are the areas where the magnetic field has very high concentrations, and because the energy of the flares is coming from the energy of the magnetic field, indeed, the most energetic flares do happen in the vicinity of the sunspots.
And how much energy does a solar flare typically emit?
It emits a lot of amount of energy, so it's roughly 10 to the 25 joules, which might be recalculated into something more comparable as, I think, 10 to the 10 megatons of TNT equivalent.
Wow, that's a lot of energy. When you're actually looking at the sun, so some of our listeners may well have looked at the sun through like a solar telescope, and you see loops on the side. Are all the flares loop-based, or are some of them sort of straight prominences, or is that just depending on the configuration that you would be looking at them from if you looked through a solar telescope at the edge of the sun?
Yes, indeed. If you look at the sun with the ultraviolet telescope, you will see the structures which resemble loops very well. But unfortunately, if you look at the sun in visible range frequencies, you don't see such features. What you only see is the surface or photosphere.
So the solar flares originate higher up in the atmosphere?
Yes, I believe so, yeah. But as the flare develops, it involves pretty much all layers of the solar atmosphere, from photosphere all the way into the heliosphere. Truly global phenomena.
When you're doing observations, do you have to at any point block out the main part of the sun so you can see the solar atmosphere, or can you just observe the sun straight off using the telescopes?
These telescopes, which obscure the sun disk, are called coronagraphs, and they're quite often used to observe the faint solar atmosphere. This is an artificial solar eclipse, basically. So if you want to see rather faint solar atmosphere, you do want to cover up the bright disk of the sun.
Do the particles in the solar flares always have the same composition, or can different types of energetic flares have different compositions of particles?
It's a difficult question. It depends on what composition we mean here. If we refer to the chemical composition, or it is a balance between the electrons and ions. With respect to the electron and ions, it seems like sometimes the flares produce much more energetic electrons than on average. So we almost don't see any signatures of energetic ions. We call such events electron-rich events. Sometimes we can see clear signatures that ions were also accelerated. As to the question about the chemical compositions, or what particularly chemical elements are being accelerated, it's not that clear, because we do not have a very good capability to definitively answer this question.
Do we know any reason why the electron-proton range might happen at all? Is there placements? Is it formation or occurrence?
We believe it is a feature related to the underlying acceleration mechanisms. And indeed, some acceleration mechanisms predict equal acceleration of electrons and, for example, protons. And some favor acceleration of energetic electrons. So, indeed, in most cases, it is underlying physics and the assumptions we made about the acceleration process.
Can you briefly describe some of these acceleration methods?
Yeah, well, the most easy one would be acceleration using some applied electric field. So we do know from secondary school that if you have electric field, the electrons will start to move and gain energy. And we believe that such situations are probably created during the solar flare. Of course, it's hard to imagine that it's a constant field. Situations become really messy. So there is many ways how we can view this alternating field. And every time when we have this alternating electric field, there should be some alternating magnetic field, which will complicate the things even further. So the second quite popular way to look at the flare is some sort of a Fermi or stochastic process, when there are multiple interactions with this surrounding electric and magnetic fields that cause particles to gain energy to higher and higher values, to be more and more energetic.
So the Sun being our closest star, we can understand and delve into it with a lot more knowledge. Earlier on, you were talking about the different layers of the Sun. Can you please describe what these different layers are and what different processes happen in them?
Yeah, the Sun, as we see in visible light, is called basically photosphere. The immediate layer above we call chromosphere. It is actually the layer you can sometimes see during the total solar eclipses. So this flash, or sometimes reddish tint color at the moment when the moon covers the solar disk, is coming from this chromosphere, and hence the name chroma from Greek color. And the higher level above the chromosphere is the solar corona, which is hot, and we still do not fully understand why it is so. The temperature of the solar corona is around 2 million degrees, which is much higher than the surface or photospheric temperature of the Sun, which is around only 6,000 degrees.
How do the solar flares differ from coronal mass ejections that the Sun produces?
It's a very good question. Over the last four decades, there were three different opinions. So first opinion was that the coronal mass ejections is basically a minor part of the flare. In the 90s, there was a dominant opinion that it's the coronal mass injections which play the most geo-effective role, so are the most influential with respect to the Earth. And now we believe that they have probably quite deep underlying physical mechanism, so we should view both flares and CMEs as interrelated processes.
And do they occur at the same time?
Interestingly, often yes, but there are exceptions.
So you'll see flares without coronal mass ejections and sometimes a coronal mass ejection without flares?
Yes, indeed, yes. For the majority of the events, we always see a flare and a CME. And it's specifically true for very large flares that normally cause large CMEs. But there are occasions when we have a flare, a very powerful flare without a CME, and sometimes there is a CME without a clear flare counterpart.
We know coronal mass ejections can correlate with the aurora being seen on the Earth. Do the flares also cause the aurora? Can they reach far enough out for that to occur?
You can say that the consequences of the flare are affecting the Earth. And often, for example, the polar oval can be enhanced substantially by the radiation from a solar flare directly. So the flash of a flare leads to appearance of more ionized material in our atmosphere.
Well, thank you very much for joining us on the Jodcast. We hope to speak to you again soon.
It was my pleasure. Thank you very much.